Chapter 2. Another Way. The flaming torch warmed her face in the cold room. Lucy barely recognized herself in the mirror. She ran a hand through her long, soft hair. As she did so, a clump came away in her fist. She stepped back in disgust, and her heel tapped against something firm. Lucy turned and stared at Shona's body, which lay prostrate on the floor. Beside her, a slither of purple UV light leaked out from under the closed bathroom door. A horn blared outside. Lucy dropped the torch and rushed to the window. The moonlight illuminated the tracks below, which ran along the harbor. A figure was stumbling towards the tracks, clutching their ribs. The horn sounded again. Lucy called out in warning, but the person couldn't hear her. She tried to open the window, but it had been drilled shut. Wisps of smoke rose between her face and her reflection on the black glass. Flickering orange appeared beside her. The flames had spread to the bedding. Lucy grabbed a chair from beneath the dresser and slammed it against the glass, striking it repeatedly as the curtains smoldered. She cried out again as the figure below stumbled onto the tracks. With a crash, the glass shattered around her. The chair fell from the tower, tumbling past dozens of levels until it smashed onto the stone paving. Cold air rushed in, feeding the flames around her. The train's lights threw the tracks into sharp relief. Lucy cried to the person at the top of her lungs, but the clattering carriages drowned her out. There was a frantic banging at the door. Lopez was calling to her desperately. Lucy gasped as she turned around. Shona stood before her, surrounded by flames. Her head was tilted to the side. Her eyes were directed downward, forlornly at the package in her arms. She rocked, gently cradling the bundle within before holding the infant out to Lucy with a tear-stained smile.
"Mother," whispered Shona.
Lucy edged backwards, but Shona grabbed her hand. She forced it onto the infant's belly where it rubbed against the stub of the child's sticky umbilical cord. The infant wrapped its hand around Lucy's little finger and she froze, unable to pull herself away.
The baby's purple-hued eyelids fluttered and its lips quavered.
The child's eyes opened, revealing two yellow irises. They stared up at Lucy. She screamed, stumbling backwards into the window ledge. The train blared its horn. Cold air swept by as she fell. The deafening clatter of the engine swallowed her. Lucy awoke, panting. Her heart was racing and her cheeks were wet. She sat up, causing a faint creak from the camp bed, and rubbed her face, letting out an exhausted sigh as she pieced together the reality around her. She shoved on her boots, not bothering to tie the laces, and pulled her jacket on as she slipped out from the tent. The half moon shone strongly across the clear night. The air was chilly, but mild for spring. Fireflies danced around the back of the parked trucks. Lucy gave the night watch person a wave and crossed the dirt yard to the medical trailer, where she ascended a short flight of metal steps and flicked on the light inside. She clicked the metal door shut behind her and blinked sharply as the neon glow prodded her tired eyes into action. She drew the blinds across the trailer windows and chugged a liter of water from the counter. She fetched a blood pressure kit from the shelf, took a seat in the medical trolley, and tore off a couple of strips of tape which she dangled from the counter. Lucy slid an armband onto her upper arm, then squeezed the hand pump until the band had inflated and she could feel her pulse strongly. She clenched her fist a dozen times until her veins bulged, while using her other hand to scrub the crook of her elbow clean with an antiseptic wipe. She lifted the syringe out of the first aid kit and snapped off the plastic sheath. She placed the tip of the needle against her vein and pierced her skin. Keeping her arm as still as possible, she retrieved a piece of tape and laid it across the syringe, securing it into position. Carefully, she took the IV bag and connected it to the rear of the syringe, then opened the nozzle. She lay back against the raised trolley and continued to do fist clenches while her blood flowed into the bag. Within 10 or so minutes, the bag was full. She resealed the nozzle, removed the syringe, and clamped a cotton pad over the pit of her elbow, securing it in place with more tape. With her operation cleared away, she flicked off the light. She allowed a minute for her eyes to adjust to the darkness, then crept out into the cool night. Animals called to each other in the distance. Where or what they were, she couldn't say. In a way, not knowing was better.
Hiding the full IV bag beneath her jacket, she gave the watch person a wave, then crossed back over to her tent, where she slid it beneath her pillow. She tried to sleep, but her mind was racing. Lopez needed her. Jack and Fliss were at risk, too. Now that Harvey knew infected people could be used, none of them were safe. She shuddered at the thought of department teams tracking down innocent families, extracting their blood, and making them weaker. As happened to Lopez, they would become trapped in an endless cycle of hallucinations, unable to make it through the transitionary phase. She had to put an end to it, and there was only one way. The shelled creature limped to a halt. Lucy, Ruth, and Karis leapt from the truck and raced towards it. They had precious few seconds for the maneuver before it latched onto the ground. Lucy and Karis threw themselves down on either side of the creature as they'd attempted so many times before. The creature's tough turquoise shell glistened in the afternoon sun. Karis threw a rope under the creature's legs, which Lucy caught. She threw it over the top of its shell to Ruth, who had placed a wedge between the shell and the ground. Ruth and Karis heaved against the rope, flipping the turtle armadillo creature onto its back and landing it on a tarp that Ruth had planted. The group gave a whoop and embraced each other with delight as the creature flailed weakly. Lucy admired the screw-shaped tusks along its undercarriage, which had foiled them so many times before. They threw more ropes around the dazed creature and trussed it up like a parcel. It had the snout of an anteater and a long, slender tongue. The creature began to wheeze. Its legs flailed in the air and foam dripped from the tip of its snout.
"Crap. Do you think we should turn it over again?" said Karis.
"If it dies on the way back, we'll have wasted a hell of a lot of time," agreed Ruth.
They had been stalking the shelled creature for 2 days now. They had successfully infected it upon first sight, using Lucy's blood. But the disease had taken longer than expected to incubate. Only now was the creature properly succumbing to the D4 cancer spreading through its body. Karis let out a yelp and crumpled to the ground, cursing loudly, clutching her foot. "Motherf," she groaned, massaging her ankle. Lucy glanced down at the offending rabbit hole.
"Get back!"
cried Ruth, yanking Karis away.
A black, silver-tongued snake slid its way to the edge of the hole and stared at the group, licking its lips rhythmically. A rattling sound emanated from the darkness behind it. The rattling grew and spread all around them. Lucy pivoted on the spot, suddenly realizing the field was covered in snake holes. Slimy, black eyes appeared at the edge of each one, watching her group, and rattling louder by the second.
"Let's haul ass!" cried Ruth.
With great effort, they dragged the creature up a loading ramp. The turtle dillo must have weighed at least 150 pounds. As they shunted it into the back of the truck, Lucy noticed its shallow breathing. They attempted to bind its legs, but the turtle dillo retracted them inside its shell. Instead, they bound over its tusks, then shoved it the final few feet. Lucy eyed the cage Karis had brought from D.C. and prayed it would hold its new occupant. Reapplying the wedge and feeding the ropes through the gaps in the metal cage, Lucy and Karis attempted to repeat their capture maneuver in reverse.
"Ruth, we can't do this without you," groaned Lucy, heaving on the ropes.
A gunshot rang out from the rear of the truck.
"Try,"
called Ruth over the growing rattling. Lucy glanced outwards as a second snake lunged from its hole toward the truck, forcing Ruth to fire again. Karis and Lucy redoubled their efforts and heaved together, flipping the weighty captive back onto its belly. Lucy gasped as the rope burned her hands. Sensing the cords slacken, the turtle dillo drew a deep, shuddering breath and lunged for the open cage door. Karis groaned, taking the full strain. Lucy quickly grabbed hold and helped haul the creature backwards.
"Are you done yet?"
cried Ruth, hastily reloading her pistol. Lucy could feel her energy draining as she and Karis strained against the creature. Her grip was failing, and days of work was about to vanish. Suddenly, the creature collapsed.
"Hurry!"
cried Karis. She and Lucy hastily secured the ropes to each corner of the truck. Tension held the creature firmly in the center of its cage. Its exhausted head slumped onto the floor. Its slender, hypermobile tongue extended outwards and licked the tarpaulin all around it, probing for information. Another gunshot rang out from the rear, followed by cursing from Ruth.
"Let's get out of here! I'll cover you!"
called Lucy, taking up the firing position.
Ruth and Karis made a bid for the driver's cabin. A cacophonous rattling spilled up from the tunnels. Dozens of black snakes poured out of the ground and sped towards the truck. They seemed to be targeting Karis' side. Was her jacket failing? Lucy couldn't keep them all at bay.
"Guys, move!"
she cried, taking pot shots as the first snake sped under the rear wheels. Karis hit the gas, thrusting them forwards. The retreat was burning precious fuel as the engine struggled against the heavy cargo. Lucy sank back against the truck and stared out. The writhing predators made her skin crawl as one by one they slipped back into the ground like oil into a drain. The mission was woefully behind schedule. If Lucy wanted to stop Harvey, they had less than a day to get the sample prepared. But as the truck lurched forwards, she wondered if she was doing the right thing. The last time she'd cultivated the white powder, the consequences for those around her had been fatal. She shuddered as she recalled Captain Rangecroft's final moments. The deep lacerations across his unconscious face as he lay dying in the medical ward of Fort Leonard Wood. It had been her idea to try and capture the creature, and he'd paid the price. Just as it had been her idea to ingest the white powder, too, hours later when beasts ambushed the evacuation convoy. Lopez and Jackson had looked to her for help. She told them it was the only way to survive. They listened to her. Now, as Lucy's truck rumbled on, carrying her infected cargo, a dark truth gnawed deep within. She was the only one left standing. The truck jolted her awake, shaking her from an uneasy dream of oily black snakes. Cool night air blew in through the open back. Lucy sat up sharply as her brain registered the orange glow beside her. Fireflies danced around the cage. More were trickling in from outside, where a stream of glowing bugs weaved through the air. The turtle Dillo was fastidiously licking one side of the metal cage, coating the mesh in a pink saliva which the fireflies appeared to be eating. Lucy's eyes fell on the ropes around the creature's shell. They, too, were covered in bands of saliva and populated by clusters of fireflies. Beneath the pink liquid, the rope was fraying. The turtle's leg slid out from its shell. It rose steadily onto its feet. The thinning restraints creaked under the strain. Lucy scrambled to her knees and banged to the side of the truck, calling out to Karis and Ruth, but as she did so, two of the ropes snapped apart. The turtle launched itself against the saliva-covered wall of its cage, burst through the weakened metal, and through the canvas wall of the vehicle.
"Stop the truck!"
yelled Lucy, leaping out after the creature. She landed roughly amidst the grass and sprinted after it. The turtle Dillo was moving with incredible speed as it disappeared into the dark field. Lucy chased after the trail of fireflies following it, but they vanished one by one, swallowed up by the creature's swiping tongue. Lucy ran on, following the sound of its rustling through the knee-high grass. Everything from the sky to the plant life seemed to be a deep midnight blue, and the creature blended into all of it seamlessly.
"Lucy, where are you?" called Ruth.
Lucy peered back. Ruth and Karis were nowhere to be seen. The truck stood deserted some distance away, casting light onto the road. The ground began to rumble. The grass around her bristled. With a soft boom, a flare soared up into the sky, casting green light overhead. Karis stood holding the gun, with her arm pointed firmly in the air. Ruth was beside her. They were some way from the vehicle. Both were pointing past Lucy. The rumbling grew louder. Lucy turned and squinted across the green glowing field. Something was racing towards them from the shadows. So many of them. Four-legged. Hooves. Lucy threw her eyes around the grassland for somewhere to shelter. The turtle was 20 yards away. It had sealed itself to the ground. She sprinted to it, seeing Ruth and Karis doing the same. The three dived behind the tough, broad shell and covered their heads as the thundering herd swept through. The herd spanned the width and length of Lucy's view and must have been hundreds strong. The horses' bellies were swollen like barrels. The shaggy brown hair on their bodies stopped at their necks, revealing mottled black and pink skin, covered in warts. A familiar, blood-curdling howl rang out across the field, cutting through the hammering of hooves against the earth. The horses whinnied in fear as they stampeded across the plain. A beast leapt over the turtle's shell and sunk its powerful jaws into a horse's neck. In the same motion, it dug its claws into the horse's body, clinging on from the front with lethal grip. A second beast leapt onto the horse's flank, dragging its claws through the shaggy fur, then sinking its teeth into a hind leg, bringing the creature crashing to the ground. Both predators extended black tentacles from their torsos. The lead beast tore the horse's belly open with its teeth, spilling shiny gen water across the ground, which they immediately suckled through the writhing cables. More horses stampeded past their fallen peer. Snarling beasts pursued them. Their sleek white fur shone beneath the flare as they weaved among their prey. A beast at the rear of the herd stopped and sniffed the air. It turned its long snout towards Lucy's group. The flare overhead flickered out. Lucy turned rigid, pressing herself against the turtle's shell, huddling alongside Ruth and Karis. The hairs on Lucy's skin bristled as a deep snarl rumbled from the darkness. She could hear the beast's sniffs as it prowled closer. A long white snout edged towards her in the scant moonlight. It sucked in Lucy's scent. Her skin crawled with terror. She stifled a cry as she felt its putrid breath blow across her face. Somewhere nearby, another beast choked and spluttered loudly. It rasped and wheezed, then slumped to the ground with a thud. The creatures around it howled in alarm. The beast nearest Lucy snarled and pivoted on the spot, bounding away through the grass to join the rest of the pack as they sprinted away, chasing the fading herd. No one dared move for several minutes until the creature's snarls and the distant horse's hooves had faded entirely. They were alone in the midnight blue field, with only the truck's lights for company and the spluttering, gargling of an abandoned beast. Ruth shone a flashlight in the direction of the creature.
"You ready?" she said, rising to her feet.
Lucy joined her. Together, they edged towards the noise. The beast lay sprawled beside a dead horse, choking. Vast shivers rippled through the length of its quivering body. Its fur was falling out, revealing patches of pinkish-black skin beneath, which bubbled and moved like it was boiling. The creature spluttered once more and spurted gen water from each of its black tentacles. The spewed, translucent liquid pooled around the horse's torn belly. The top layer was streaked with a swirling band of rainbow colors, like an oil slick.
"We should get out of here," said Lucy.
"Shouldn't we collect it as a sample or something?" said Ruth.
"It's not safe. I've never seen gen water pool this fast. Something in the horse's DNA must have done this, like a defense from one of the D4 creatures against another. Both creature cells are despecializing incredibly quickly. Look how they're merging. They're forming a single globule. The next step is re-specialization. It could happen any minute, and I have no idea what it will generate. We need to get out of here," said Lucy. They hurried back to Karis, who was clinging to the turtle, traumatized.
You're alive. Your jacket worked too," she said,
pointing a shaky finger at Ruth. Ruth pressed her hand to her chest, reverently patting the blood pack Lucy had given her.
"It did. The difference is, I know who saved me. Can you say the same?" said Ruth.
It took them all night to make it back to base. During that time, the turtle Dillo's condition deteriorated. It was too weak to attempt further escapes, but Lucy was worried that it might now die before it yielded any of the vital white powder they so badly needed. As they hauled their captive down the ramp, soldiers and farmers stopped eating breakfast and stared in disbelief. Sid, the Secretary of Agriculture, paced up to the truck.
"What in hell's name do you call this?" he fumed.
"Research," said Lucy.
"You three go AWOL for 3 days and then come back with this thing?" said Sid.
"I sanction the mission under authority from the Medical Council," said Karis as the crate slid onto the ground with a thud. The turtle Dillo let out a feeble hiss.
"Authority?" said Sid. "You're a botanist, Karis. You report to me. Your job is to make sure we don't all starve to death in the next 3 months, not waste time playing Darwin's Adventures or whatever the hell this is."
The farmers murmured from the sidelines, clutching their bowls of porridge. The creature had retracted inside its shell, which had lost its sheen. The brilliant turquoise was deteriorating into blotchy patches of pastel blue and green.
"Is it dangerous?" said Johnny, stepping closer and eyeing it warily.
"It's a herbivore. It doesn't attack humans. Can you guys get it to the lab truck?" said Lucy.
Johnny, Pete, and a few of the other farmhands begrudgingly scarfed down the remainder of their breakfasts, then took over the haulage, aiming for Karis's mobile laboratory.
"A package arrived for you while you were away," said Sid.
"From the hospital," said Karis. He nodded resentfully as Karis immediately set off for her trailer. Lucy was incensed by the news.
"What the hell, Sid? A DC truck was here? You promised me I'd be rotated out at the next transfer," said Lucy.
"Quiet, young. I made no such promise. You may be Adrian's niece or whatever, but out here there's no special treatment."
Lucy's blood boiled at this misrepresentation.
"Adrian's niece? I was his son's life partner, you asshole."
"Really?
Poor Adrian," said Sid.
Lucy took a step towards him, her fists clenched, but Ruth shoved a firm hand against her chest.
"Cool it. People are depending on you. Focus on the powder," said Ruth quietly.
Lucy stared at the caged turtle as the farmers dragged it across the yard. A wave of excitement stole over her.
"Wait,"
she cried, hurrying over to the cage. She pointed to the shell above the turtle's rear leg. A thin band of white powder lined the archway.
"It's working. This is what we're gathering."
Sid marched over.
"Looks like dandruff," he snorted.
"It's more like anthrax. It's highly toxic, so no one get too close. But we can weaponize it against the beasts, against all of the creatures," beamed Lucy.
"You mean it's like a defense?" said Johnny.
"That's the aim. Proper protection for farmers and soldiers, which will secure our food production capabilities. But I'll need to get it back to DC for more research," said Lucy, making a concerted effort to speak Sid's language.
"We'll see about that," frowned the secretary.
Karis had reemerged from her trailer with a foil parcel tucked under her arm.
"Hey, Green Fingers, is what she's telling me true?"
"It's a prototype,"
said Karis distractedly.
"I mean the powder. Is it toxic?"
"Highly," replied Karis. "In that case, get it loaded up and move your damn trailer down the road. I don't want anyone else on this camp dying for no good reason," said Sid.
A handbell rang out across the way, and the remaining 24 workers and soldiers got up from the breakfast campfire and prepared to move out for the day's work, attempting to resurrect industrial-scale farm equipment in the surrounding fields. Sid gave Lucy a look of deep distrust, then peeled off to join them.
"Is that what I think it is?" said Lucy, eyeing Karis's parcel.
Karis nodded grimly.
"Two more packs. Harvey sent a note. Apparently infected blood loses its defensive qualities within a few days of being collected. So, those pouches will need to be constantly replaced," said Ruth.
"All the more reason to get this powder to Harvey, ASAP," said Lucy.
"How long do you think it will take to grow a big enough sample? The disease should accelerate over the next few days."
"No way the turtle's gonna last that long. That thing's weak. At this rate, it'll be dead by dinner," said Ruth.
"We can't let that happen. The powder stops growing when it dies," said Lucy.
"But how do we keep it alive?"
"Feed it,"
shrugged Ruth.
"With what? Gen water?"
"I know a place, but you're not gonna like it," said Karis. Lucy rejoined the others by the deserted campfire. Ruth's insistence that they all get 4 hours of sleep before departing had cost them precious daylight. According to Sid, the camp had been put on high alert with a strict sundown curfew in effect. Karis turned her back awkwardly as she tugged out the old blood bag from her flak jacket and inserted the fresh one sent by Harvey.
"What do you think I should do with the used one?" she said awkwardly.
"Hold a funeral if you like," said Lucy, scraping out the last of the porridge from the vat. It was dry as cement.
"You should destroy it,"
said Ruth, finishing her own bowl. Karis glanced around guiltily, then tossed the blood bag into the center of the log pile, where it wilted and blistered in the flames. Lucy bit her lip as she thought of Lopez. She couldn't ignore the gnawing memory of him strapped down in the cell, being electrocuted, blasted with white noise, submerged in ice baths. He'd tried to hang himself, and she'd intervened. What right did she have? He was infected because of her. He was still alive because of her. He was trapped because of her. Was it his blood on the fire? Or in the new pouch? She forced the thoughts from her mind and tried to focus on the task ahead. The sooner they got the white powder to Harvey, the sooner they could stop his insane blood bag program. They loaded the truck with shovels and buckets and set off towards the D4 wheat field. Lucy shuddered as they rumbled along the uneven road, past the place where they'd burned the farmer's body just days before. A mound of soil covered the spot, with a large rock laid at the end in lieu of a headstone. Pete must have returned to bury his wife in the intervening days. A handful of saplings poked through the loose earth, stretching out their yellow-green leaves across the grave and basking in the sun. As they approached the perimeter fence, Lucy and Karis exchanged an anxious glance. They knew the dangers that lay in the fields beyond. Last time, 7 of them had crossed the threshold, and only 5 came back. Those were bad odds in a group of 3. Lucy's infected status gave her little confidence in a field where predators could respecialize and learn fast. One swing of a giant centipede's tail could shatter her bones. If a D4 creature figured out how to strike her without shedding her blood, her toxicity would be no defense at all. They parked and crossed through the metal gate. The purple ivy covering the fence was thickening at the top. With firearms in one hand and shovels in the other, they approached the unnaturally warm field. Lucy glanced at the path Pete had hacked apart 3 days prior. 4 rat carcasses lay across the path. Their flesh had been devoured, leaving behind only clumps of fur and bone. The fallen crop stems from their previous visit were gone too, devoured by the insects, leaving only black soil beneath. Taking care not to disturb the wheat, which brimmed with clusters of sleeping insects huddled together in pods at the tips of each stalk, they entered the side of the field. Pressing the grass apart, they forged a direct path through the dense growth until they reached the site of the attack. They stopped and surveyed the scorched clearing. There was no trace of the centipede or the sergeant, save for patches of glistening damp. Lucy looked around for an explanation. Usually, the clothes remained behind after the body degraded. Perhaps the D4 enzyme had adapted to digest them too?
Might as well try here, said Karis, kneeling by a silvery patch of earth which looked like a freeway for snails.
Ultra-short, thin golden stems poked through the soil, bereft of leaves.
Size looks about right, said Lucy, grimly estimating what sort of liquid footprint the sergeant's decapitated body would have left.
So his body's been entirely degraded? Said Ruth.
Stalks crackled from the surrounding crop rows. The group froze, guns drawn, peering around the clearing. Lucy's eyes flitted to Ruth, then Karis. The 3 turned back to back and scoured the field for movement. Another crackle, this time from the opposite direction. A grouse burst up from the dense crop line, beating its wings frantically as it fled for the neighboring fields. Lucy studied the direction the bird had emerged from. Her heart pounded, but all was still. After a moment, Karis broke away.
This'll have to do. Let's take what we can and see if the turtle can extract the gen water from it, she said, running her gloved fingers through the moist dirt.
For several minutes, the 3 of them dug in silence. To Lucy's surprise, the silvery trails ran through the soil like a seam.
I guess that's it, said Karis,
setting her shovel down and examining the filled buckets. Ruth cursed and shook out her hand as her shovel struck something firm. Lucy knelt down and scooped the soil back with her hands, revealing a thick, knotted root running horizontally through the ground like a pipe. She recognized the color and texture all too well.
What is it? Said Karis, looking closely.
It's a land reef. We thought we'd cleared it, but it looks like it runs a lot deeper than we'd imagined.
She knelt back and gazed in the direction the route led, through the D4 wheat field and into the fenced perimeter beyond. A cry rang out from the field. It was a man's voice.
Is that?
Began Karis, looking from Ruth to Lucy and mirroring their expressions of dread.
The larva. It must have survived the grenade, said Lucy in horror.
To hell with this. Let's go, said Ruth, drawing her rifle.
But your bucket, said Lucy.
Leave it. We need to move. These jackets will only work for so long. I really don't want to be testing the expiration date on mine, said Ruth.
Lucy and Karis grabbed their buckets and took up Ruth's between them. They dived into the overgrowth, jostling against the densely packed stems as they went. Pods of wheat fell to the ground where the insects unfurled in their wake. The sound of splintering stems echoed around them, accompanied by another chilling cry for help.
Hurry!
Called Ruth. As Karis pressed ahead, the handle on the middle bucket sheared, Lucy collided with the falling container and fell to the ground. She scrambled around, trying to sweep the gen water sludge inside.
"Leave it,"
ordered Ruth, hauling Lucy up by the scruff of her neck. They rushed after Karis, who had disappeared from the crop jungle and was speeding towards the fence. The sound of collapsing crops was closing in. Ruth fired a suppressing pattern into the foliage. The row of plants behind them fell flat with a crunch. Ruth screamed in terror as the wailing creature reared upwards, casting a shadow across their path. Praying Karis was ready to cover them, Lucy dropped her half-filled bucket and ran. Straining every sinew in her body, she dived clear of the crop rows and sprinted for the gate.